Good morning, everyone. So today we will be sitting in silence, and I'd like to speak a few words about this before we do so. And after the silent sitting, if there are any questions or anyone wants to share anything about it, they are welcome to. But let's keep it specific to sitting in silence and meditation. You see, this practice of meditation or silent sitting goes hand in hand with living the teaching. And the reason is this: it is that part of the day we have for ourselves, where we simply sit and rest in our own being, in our presence, in our being. Because the rest of the day, we project outwards. We get engaged in activities. Our sense perceptions go out. We get involved in the dramas of life. We get involved in the travails of life. Our conditioning kicks in, and the whole day goes in action and reaction and so on and so forth. Now, in silent sitting, what happens is, it is truly a journey within, not a journey without. Thoughts are bound to arise. The mind is made up of thoughts. Thoughts are bound to arise. And in silent sitting, these thoughts are merely witnessed. And one will find that this quality of witnessing starts permeating one's daily living. Because for once, when we sit in silence with ourselves, we get the understanding that thoughts arise on the screen of consciousness. And there is something that is aware of the thoughts arising. Or as Nisargadatta Maharaj would say, there is a wedge which is placed between being and experiencing. Otherwise, throughout the day, we are bombarded with experiences. And so this quality of witnessing that takes place in silent sitting, without your knowing it, it will start permeating the events of your day. And that is why Rameshji said, true meditation is witnessing whatever arises as movements in consciousness. So one will find, as the journey of life goes on, that things which were upsetting you earlier, the pleasures and pains, the ups and downs, the highs and lows, with more and more witnessing, those extremes don't tend to take place anymore. Because earlier one was swayed with the experience, like a pendulum going and swinging from left to right. But now, with the quality of witnessing, the pendulum may still swing, but that is witnessed. And that is where the peace is to be found. Now, The main point here is to be relaxed. The spine should preferably be straight, because the life force, the energy, flows easier when the spine is straight. So, straight spine, you could sit anywhere you like, on your bed, on the armchair, on the floor. That is not really relevant, but comfortable enough so the body's wants and aches and pains are not going to distract you for these 20-25 minutes that we are going to sit for. This is not an exercise in concentration, please. I received an email where someone said they are doing Naam Japa, etc., and the head is hurting. That head is hurting because the mind is involved. The thinking mind wants to control the experience of meditation. Whereas we are saying the opposite. Let it loose. Let it be. Let whatever thoughts come, come. Nothing is to be stopped. Let the flow of life take place in this meditation and just witness it. That is all. So do not consider this as a practice as such, where one will then evaluate, was I successful or not? There are no marks here. This is not an examination. No one's meditation is better than the others. Can silence be graded? It cannot. Even if one witnesses the voice in the head that we all have, telling us, I have to do this, I should not do that, I should not, my mind should not be wandering. Even that is witnessed. If even there's a distraction, let's say someone enters your room, someone closes a door, even that noise is witnessed. No should not have happened or should have happened. We cannot control life. And this meditation shows us the way to allow whatever happens to happen without building a story around it, which we normally do, which is our favorite pastime. We create stories around each and every minor event as well, which transpires in our daily life. This is about the end of those stories. Now, there is one request that for those who feel they may not be able to sit for so long. You see, I would like to watch everyone. So I'll be switching to, I think, what is called the gallery view. So if you feel that there's a lot of movement where you are, or distractions, or you're lying down on your bed, then the request is to switch off your video. But it would be nice to connect with you all. Normally, I don't have this gallery view where I see everyone, because it can be a bit of a distraction. But since it is a silent sitting, it would be nice that we all sit together as a group, those who are on Zoom, those who are watching on YouTube. I know it's not possible. So that is the only request. And at the end of the period, there's nothing fixed. It can be 20 minutes, 30 minutes at the most, somewhere in between. But when it is meant to end, I will say a few words. And then we can open the floor for any kind of sharing that would take place. So you feel free to keep your eyes open or closed. Closed is preferable simply because the energy then does not go outwards to distractions. But it's a personal choice. It is truly incredible, the sacredness of your being, which is taken for granted, is allowed to present itself as the foreground of your consciousness when you sit in silence. There is no greater puja or worship than sitting in silence. The birth, your birth, was the birth of consciousness. The ego and the thinking mind came a little later. Sitting in silence is honoring that. God does not want a greater gift than that. You can now open your eyes. Sardatta Maharaj said that realized people are very quiet. So we had a taste of that realization for the last half an hour. Acceptance of God's will leads to being quiet. Acceptance that no one truly does anything leads to being quiet. Acceptance that no matter what my problems are, they are nothing compared to the problems of the millions who are below the poverty line, leads to being quiet. Acceptance that very little is in my control, starting from my breathing, my heart pumping, all the failures and successes in my life were truly not in my control, leads to being quiet. And being quiet leads to being present to whatever life may bring. Sometimes pleasure, many times pain. So now, if anyone would like to share any thoughts, questions, let me do so.
Can you hear me?
Yes, gentlemen. Good morning.
Good morning. I've been contemplating witnessing a lot lately, as that seems to be the center of the core of the philosophy. Now, I wonder, is witnessing different from mindfulness?
Have you been contemplating witnessing, or have you been witnessing contemplating?
Mostly the first still. Witnessing only occurs occasionally still.
Witnessing the contemplating is always going on. The witness cannot leave you.
Yeah, I understand witnessing to be aware of the contents of the mind. We are always aware. That is for sure. But I think we're not always aware of the contents of our minds.
That is because we are involved in the contents of the mind.
Exactly, yeah.
And, you know, it depends on the definition of mindfulness. There are various definitions of mindfulness. If mindfulness implies concentration on one thought or on one technique, then in that sense, they are different. But more importantly, in daily living, how does the witness permeate our daily living? When we see that we are no longer observing and judging people or events that take place in our lives, when we see that is not happening, then witnessing is automatically happening. You see, witnessing becomes observing by an individual and then the individual making judgments in life. With the teaching, these judgments drop away because the judgment is based on, I know better. This is how things should be and should not be. And we judge people and situations. When we accept that everything is God's will, we are all instruments through whom the same consciousness functions. That acceptance leads to the dropping away of the individual who has so far been constantly judging people, himself or herself, and the events that have transpired in their lives. The dropping away of that individual with its judgments is automatically the allowing of witnessing. So it's like you shift gears in a car. You will find that in your life, the observing by an individual is happening now less and less, and witnessing the flow of life is happening more and more.
Yes. Is it correct to say that witnessing is an aspect or perhaps a function of the sattvic mind? So if there's already a certain stillness, the witnessing will naturally occur. There will be a kind of distance between the thoughts and consciousness.
That is very true. It is, you could say, far easier in that sense for the sattvic mind to be the witness. But having said that, even for a rajasic mind or tamasic mind, the recognition of the rajas or tamas would be the witnessing. You see? But yes, that is why you see in the Indian ashrams, for example, they would encourage a very light vegetarian diet so that sattvic food is eaten because food impacts the mind. And so with sattvic environment, which is the ashram environment, where there's not much disturbance, with sattvic food being ingested, it is simpler to slip into meditation and witnessing and so on and so forth. So you are right about that.
Yeah, because when ego takes over, in my case, ego, you know, it jumps up whenever somebody tells me what to do. I don't like it when somebody tells me what I have to do. So then this ego just jumps up, and before I know it, I've said already something. So the reaction, it's very difficult to witness that. Because
yes, it is. You see, I'll tell you why. I have given this example many times before in the satsangs. You know, I give this example of a child running through the house and his parents are very rich. And let's say his parents have expensive curios all over the house, like collections from Italy and Spain and Egypt, beautiful pieces of porcelain and all that. And now in the playful mood, one day this child hits a curio and it falls to the ground. Now, the immediate reaction of one of the parents is, I'm being so careless, why did you break it? That just comes out of the parent. What have you done? That is how it begins. This child had no clue whether it had done something. Now it is accused of having done something, as a result of which a curio has broken, and the parent had paid the price for that curio and invested in the parent's sense of self in that curio, as far as the parent is concerned. Now the child thinks, I have done something wrong. And the child is warned, be careful, see that you don't do it again. So this doership has not been in the child's control. The child was going with the flow of life. And now it has been accused of the crime of doership. And so the child grows up. And the child now has already developed the conditioning of what it should do and what it should not do. And that is how we rebel when someone tells us to do something and not do something. This is hardwired into our conditioning, and that is why we don't like it. So this, what you have said, this automatic knee-jerk reaction which comes up even as a grown-up when someone says you should do this, this is the same pattern which gets triggered, you see. And therefore, there is nothing you can do about it but witness even that reaction arising, knowing that it is truly not your reaction. It is coming from a distant past based on your conditioning from childhood, and therefore it is not your reaction. If it was your reaction, you would be able to control it. The fact is, you are not able to control it. So that has to be allowed, because this play of life, this drama of life, this teaching shows you how this blueprint you came with is just playing itself out. And you will be surprised that with this acceptance, even of this reaction, there will be a transformation. The understanding will come that even the person who is telling me to do something which I don't like, even that is not in his or her control. And what could happen? Even after the initial reaction, you may end up laughing at the absurdity of the situation, you see. Nothing is taken personally anymore like it used to be taken. That is the gift of this teaching.
Yes. Yeah, I've experienced that also when a guard at my compound, he became very angry at me for something was not related to me. But at that point, I was quite silent, and I felt his fear or his insecurity behind his anger, and that made it much more easy to accept. So a kind of compassion arose. So I think this intuition is also playing a role in this.
You are absolutely right. In fact, what you have said is also one of the, I would say, I can't say stages, but what happens, you see, with this understanding is, like you said, you see anger arising in someone else. And that anger, especially if the person gets involved in that anger, it shows that the person is suffering his or her anger. It may be directed at you, but now you know that the person who is involved in the anger is suffering it. It's a suffering which is being expressed at anger. If it is extended in the duration of time, and compassion will arise for that. You see, where I live, we had a neighbor on this floor who was single. She passed away a few months ago, and she was angry with the world. She was angry with all of us. She would pick fights. But when this understanding dawned that, why would anyone do this deliberately? It's such extensive suffering, you see. You will be surprised, Jerome, that in her last days, which is about, I would say, a month before her passing, when she lost her mind a bit. She was helpless. There was nobody at her home. The people on our floor, no matter how she treated them, they started giving food to her, dinner, lunch, tea, and coffee. So what was happening? Compassion arose, because deep down we know it, that anyone who is suffering so much anger, hate, and resentment is truly suffering. So that did not stop the people on our floor from giving her food. Compassion arose, as you said. Compassion arose for that. You may have been at the receiving end, but compassion arose. That is the gift of the teaching. And that is what happened with this lady. Till her last days, she was served so generously by everyone on the floor of our building, all the neighbors, etc. That is what happens.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Beautiful. Jerome, which part of the world do you live in?
I live in Shanghai.
Okay.
So, time is okay. Still to join.
Oh. Yes, To.
Yes. Hello, Gautam.
Hello.
Good morning. I just wanted to thank you for this beautiful meditation.
My pleasure. Where are you from?
I live in Sweden.
Okay.
So it's like 7:30 seven here? No? Yeah. 7:40. But I usually got early to meditate anyway, so it's quite okay. It's beautiful to sit together like this. It's quite fascinating that it works on a distance.
Yes.
You know, because this corona thing, I usually go once a week to sit with other people, but I can't now, because I cannot go, you know, outside this region of Stockholm. So I'm so thankful for this opportunity. And as I said, it's quite fascinating that it works on a distance. Can you talk about that a little bit? That it works? We got together. Is it like the distance doesn't matter?
Can we talk about the fact that sitting in silence, though at a distance, does not matter? You see, thank you for that question, too, because, you know, it's not as simple as it could appear to be. There are a couple of aspects here. One is that there are no two kinds of silence. Silence is silence. Okay? But what happens is when we are sitting with people in a joint endeavor, a joint attempt, in silence, a certain vibration is created. Now, that vibration really does not depend on being next to anyone, because that vibration is an internal vibration. Ultimately, silence is the stillness of the mind, and it is the absence of content. So that does not depend on being in proximity to someone or being away from someone, because that is within you yourself. But a catalyst helps the process, and any form of meditation, even if it's distant meditation, group distant meditation, helps one to tap into that very deep well of silence. So in one sense, distance truly does not matter. Now, in the other sense, it does also help to be together, which we are not allowed in this particular time that we are going through. Because that vibration, because after all, what you see as the body right now is nothing but a field of vibration. And what you are seeing right now is just the outer shell, the outer sheath of the body. There are five such sheaths. There's the physical body, the pranic body, there's the mind body, there's the intellect body, and there's the body of bliss. So there are five sheets. It appears there's one body and there's another body. So the transmission is not happening at the level of the body. The transmission is happening through the body, you see. So that is why you find in India, especially ashrams, people tend to go there where the master is. They tend to congregate. They like sitting together in meditation because then they are in the living presence of that energy field. And that is why Visardatta Maharaj would say, when he was asked, and a common example I give, is there any benefit in actually physically sitting with a master or sage? And his reply was that the trees near a sandalwood tree in the forest start emitting the same fragrance. You see, so sometimes, and for some people, it is easier to pick up on this piece when they are physically with a master, a teacher, a guide or whatever. And for others who have generally a quiet disposition, a quieter mind, they may not have that need. They would be comfortable where they are, and in a long distance session or group meditation, they can slip into that perhaps as easily.
Okay, so we're together in spirit then. Anyway, okay. I hope that you will continue with this meditation sessions in the future, even after this pandemic has passed.
Yes, let's see how this is received. You see, in the satsangs at home, Tove, we actually begin with sitting in silence a bit, and we end with silence. And sometimes we have had sessions of only silent sitting. So if we feel that people would like this, then I'd be happy to oblige, because we too have here a kind of an extension of the lockdown which we are going through. It is not opening up to the degree that we felt it would. And where I am, which is in Mumbai, it's in a state where it's quite been impacted quite in a big way by the virus situation. So things are taking time. So hopefully it will happen.
I certainly hope so. Thank you, Gautam.
Yes, Harish.
What I sensed today collectively is very difficult for me to sense individually. So I had looked forward to this Sunday, and I could find the discipline sitting here. Now, can you suggest how do I carry forward this till the next week, till I see you again? How do I maintain this? And I also sense that today, while sitting here, that the body is a very essential instrument for the mind to find its peace or for meditation. So any suggestions of how do I maintain my diet? Because as you mentioned, sattvic food helps. We've been eating anything and everything during lockdown. So I want to carry this forward. I need to have this. I desire to have this discipline constantly till next class.
Harish, generally, if one has this practice or habit of sitting in silence, like many people do, it helps to fix a particular time and a particular place. That is quite important. You see, the reason is because there is something called the rhythm of the body. What you will find is that the body then automatically gets tuned to going into a mode of quietness at that particular time and at that particular spot. You see, the spot is quite important also. at least initially, because as I said, everything is a vibration. So it builds a field of vibration. So when you are sitting and you are in meditation, there's a force field created on that spot. I can give you an example. I'm not sure if you had looked at the satsang videos earlier, but I have a friend of mine in Bombay who is an expert on mantras. You know, he's written many books in Marathi. His first language is in Marathi. And he is an expert in this subject. So one day we were sitting on Marine Drive, on the promenade, you know, where people sit. And he was explaining to me that he said the power of the mantra, which is a vibration, is so strong that if a person was sitting there and got up, he could sense the vibration there after the person got up. Now, so this vibration, this sitting in silence, or if you see in ashrams, the master is always sitting in a particular seat, the gadi or whatever, that grounds the energy faster. So as one builds up sitting in silence, these are processes which help. Same time, same place. That in that sense, it is a discipline. But the most important point is that the peace that you experience in sitting in silence starts slipping into your daily activities. That is actually the purpose. The practice itself is not the purpose. The practice is a gateway to that. You see? And like we discussed, this witnessing which takes place easily, far easier than in our daily life, in meditation, that starts seeping into your daily activities. Sorry. Sattvic food is preferred because there are various reasons. I mean, there are no do's and don'ts, you know, and there's this whole debate on vegetarian versus non-vegetarian food. It is not that black and white, according to me, because see, there are people in locales where they don't have vegetation growing. For example, in the high up in the mountains and all that. Many Tibetans were hardcore non-vegetarians. But by and large, as we have seen, and thanks to social media, much becomes evident now, the cruelty and torture being put upon the process of killing animals. You see, the fear enzymes and vibrations seep into the muscle, blood, and so on of the animal being killed. I had a very interesting experience on this, Harish. I noticed in my non-vegetarian days, which was going back many years, that I was having certain dreams when I had certain kinds of food. Like I used to eat chicken, and I thankfully had this awareness that the dreams which I was getting was related to the meat which I was eating. And when I would stop eating that, those dreams didn't happen. So I understood that we have to be very careful with what we ingest, because if we are ingesting all these, fear-based enzymes and now in addition to that whole process, you have genetically modified food products, etc. All that is going in. So I did find that I was naturally dropping this kind of food off. It was a very natural process. There was not a right and wrong about it. But I did certainly see the change it made in the body-mind mechanism. There's no doubt about that. There's no question about that. And so in that sense, a sattvic diet does help. That I am seeing from my personal experience. Even when Ramana Maharshi was asked this question, he has said the same thing. That a sattvic diet does help. That much is, I think, very evident.
Thank you. Today I was less fidgety because I knew that your presence, collective, it just got about a more this dedication. It was more dedicated. When I'm alone, I'm very fidgety. Even if I've sat to meditate, I'm very fidgety, and it's very like it just gets over faster than sitting. 25 minutes was brilliant, but for me, it's not as long as it is for today. And yes. So with practice, I guess, because if it happened for me, it happened through me today. If it happened, the meditate, I could sit for 25 minutes. This was me who sat for 25 minutes. So I would just like to encourage myself doing it more often for longer periods of time. And I guess I will try it. I will give it a try for sure. At the right time, at the right place, and give it a designated time and place.
Certainly. And it will only help. It will only help as long as then it doesn't become an egocentric activity where, you know, the 25 minutes is now 1 hour, then 2 hours. And then Harish says, I sat for 2 hours in meditation. Mm-hmm. See? So that one has to be careful of, because many people who are on the spiritual journey then end up developing spiritual egos, mm-hmm. which are far more deadly than the normal egos. But you see, there's one important point you made, Harish. The body is fidgety because it follows the mind. Mm-hmm. When a mind is not dancing around like a monkey, the fidgetiness in the body starts reducing. So that is a very good, let's say, pointer for you yourself, that your body will indicate to you the meditation that is going on within. And if you have felt this, that sitting for these 20-25 minutes has been slightly different than when you tried it yourself, then by all means, please honor that and do practice it and see what happens. And not only see what happens in your practice, but in your daily living. I am sorry, I keep hammering this point again and again, because I see the two are interlinked. They are not exclusive of each other. There will be a direct impact on your daily living with this sitting in silence. Okay?
Yes, thank you.
Today I have the luxury of a little more time because my wife is busy with some stuff. Yes, Kumar.
Namaste, Gautam. Thank you for the very beautiful meditation session.
My pleasure. Is that some Kashmiri furniture behind you? It looks like very intricate wooden carvings and all that.
Yes. It was from a local artisan from Kashmir only. Bed and the chairs.
Where are you from?
I'm from Amritsar, Punjab.
Okay. You know, I have been to Amritsar once and I had the most beautiful visit to the Golden Temple. Firstly, it was so close to my heart, you see, because the God that is worshipped there is a book of knowledge. That was very touching. The reverence with which they carried that book. You know, they keep it in a resting place in the night and they bring it in a procession to the main temple. So I witnessed that, and it was so touching to see that. And the other thing which I sensed, which again makes so much sense, as everyone might be aware who's aware of the Golden Temple, it's surrounded by a pool of water. You see, now water absorbs vibrations easily. And the chanting which has been going on of the Guru Granth Sahib there is all absorbed by that water body. So it has such a beautiful vibration in that space that just to sit there is a really spectacular feeling. So I have very fond memories of Amritsar, but we went only to the Golden Temple, nowhere else. So you reminded me of that. So go ahead.
So my question is the peak of meditation where just the witness alone remains and there's nothing left to be witnessed?
See, when there's nothing left to be witnessed, then what was witnessing becomes non-witnessing. Okay. But that cannot be a permanent state of non-witnessing. Then one is going into the levels of samadhi, you see, where you are totally disconnected and disengaged from the world. But I would say that the peak of meditation is not that end. The peak of meditation is witnessing whatever arises. Whatever arises as a movement in consciousness, being established as consciousness. The thing is that striving for this peak is what can create some trouble for us. You know, because Kunwar, life is about witnessing. That is life. And what we are directly concerned with is the peace, calm, and equanimity in daily living and not in just meditation as a practice. So, of course, the most beautiful meditation would be where no thoughts arise. If no thoughts arise, there's nothing to witness. And if there's nothing to witness, then I am in the non-witnessing state, right? But life does not mean that no thoughts will arise, correct? Thoughts are bound to arise. So rather focus on this aspect than, you know, to get into, let me reach the peak of meditation where no thoughts should arise. Because then it can become a point of stress. So I hope I have made that clear. Anything else? No?
Morning, Gautam sir.
Yes, Pragati.
Thank you again for a beautiful session today. There are a few things on my mind. Firstly, it's an opportunity of meditation with you, so I would like to ask my questions regarding the experiences that I have. And I want to know if what I experience ultimately is actually being in the being, or is it what I just think it is?
Right.
It starts with the vibrations in my hand. The thoughts, of course, are always there in the background. The voice in the head is always there. But the spiraling of energy in the hands, the circulation of energy in the body, it's there all the time. And in the end, there's nothing but a single vibration. The whole body becomes just one vibration. So is that what we are calling being in the being, is what I wanted to know.
It depends. When that is happening, what do you feel?
I'm not thinking in those moments when that happens. It's just the experience is happening. The flow is there. Basically, starting from my solar plexus to up above, the energy is so intense that I don't feel anything else. The circulation happens. Very intense.
But the feeling is one of peace and...
Yes, yes, yes. Definitely.
So that is being, resting in the being.
This is what we are looking for.
That is resting in the being. But more importantly, this resting in the being has to be in daily living. Not when you sit and it goes up for 20 minutes, 15 minutes, you see. It would, in fact, I would say rather imagine if you were resting in your being throughout the day and you had no experience in meditation. Which one would you pick?
I would pick the first one.
Exactly. Exactly.
So with this lockdown and your talks and satsangs, I've really come to a realization that no matter how much we learn or listen or acquire, unless we put it in our daily living, it's no use.
No use, absolutely.
Thanks to you, I've come to put it in my daily living. I don't weave stories around, or even if I'm doing, I know it and I stop right there.
So, you know, yes. This reminded me of a book I had read probably 30 years ago. It was called Bringers of the Dawn. I don't read such books. It was what would be in the genre of channeling books. But it really impacted me because there were many correlations with Advaita. And one line which stayed with me was, human beings love their drama so much that they get lost in the process of processing. You see, that is the thing which most of us do. We love our drama so much that we love to think about it all the time and give reality to it in that sense. We get lost in the process of processing.
So, I am a pro at creating such dramas in my life. But I can see them clearly now. I can see it arising now, and I can stop also at times.
Yes, that is the main thing. The awareness of it is enough, Pragati. As Eckhart Tolle says, that being aware of one's insanity is the first step to sanity.
I have a little question, another one related to food. So we were talking about tamasic and sattvic food. Ever since I've come to know that garlic or heat-inducing foods are a hindrance, tamasic hain. So I cannot just take them anymore because I feel I should not. Even though I like them, it's kind of, it creates a lot of tussle in my head if I should or shouldn't. But I want to at times. I love onions, but I don't eat them as much now, thinking that they will hinder. Basically not in alignment with what I feel and what I do.
Fair enough. So it's fine. Sometimes you may want to balance it because your mind tells you and your experiences, you know, it creates heat in the body, etc. And sometimes you'll feel like, let me treat myself once in a while. Don't go with any black and white, hard and fast rules. If the conscience kicks in and says, no, you know, you should not be having it, don't have it. Be easy on yourself. Let it flow. And if it is meant to drop off, it will drop off. That is more important. You see, we want to control and we think we have this volition. Allow it. If this natural feeling has arisen, I should eat less and less. And then you're even sensing its benefits. Let it flow its natural course. No? Allow it to happen.
Losing control is something very difficult, I'm finding. In every aspect, actually, I'm trying to look wherever I'm trying to be controlling, and I find it everywhere. Every aspect of life, I'm trying to control all the time. My family, my kids, my eating habits, my work, anything and everything. So it's hard to lose control on everything at the same time. So I have to go slow. But yeah, it kind of now feels that there's a lot that needs to be let go.
You know, Pragati, I was received a mail by a lady who lost her son. And she said that her biggest regret was that she tried to control him too much. And now there was no one left to control. You see, we may want to exercise all the control we think because we know best. And here, this whole control drama which she was playing out with her only child. Look what life did. Took away the child. Was that in her control? That was her realization. Sometimes life gives us very hard lessons. Very hard lessons. But the sheer fact that we can't control these events is actually quite humbling. What we must try. So let me move on now to, I think there are a couple more questions and we can close the session. So we can do other things on Sunday. Okay. Pleasure. Yes, Sunita. Is Sunita there? Okay, I think she's... might have got tired of waiting. Now we have Anuja.
Yeah, Hi, namaste. This is the first time I'm on live session. Otherwise, I've heard you on YouTube. Very nice to hear from you. Often heard you speaking on genetics and conditioning. So just a background, I'm a mother of two, 2 years and 4 years. So genetic is something that's not in our control, but is there something that I can do with conditioning, if I call it in this Kalyug? Obviously, my conditioning and my husband's conditioning will impact my kids' conditioning, but any guidance on that aspect?
Anuja, we were to restrict this to a session on questions on meditation, but since you have asked it, there's no guidance as such. It is, you know, spiritual teachings which come your way are fresh conditioning. So if there's any specific teaching which you find appealing and you feel it has impacted you in some way, that is fresh conditioning which can alter or amend the prior conditioning. That is what spiritual teachings do. So it is the teaching which does the job. When the understanding is there, like you have come with your own blueprint and conditioning, like your husband has come, then you will understand that your parents too came with that conditioning and so have your children. So then you start exploring the teaching, and the sting of doership, where you were blaming and condemning people earlier for doing things, that sting gets removed. So that is the process of, you could say, the teaching unfolding in your life. And that is what starts happening. So there are many videos on this, and I think you can look at that or read my books and you might find your answers there. So we can now close this session. Like I said, a couple of points. One is that if you have found this silent sitting of any value and you would like to have more of it, do write in so that the team here, Divya, Sangeeta, and whoever else is part of the team, they can assess the frequency of these silent sittings. I love sitting in silence, so I'm happy to oblige any time on that. Now, things are not clear right now here in Mumbai on this lockdown, so we will explore having Sunday, regular Sunday talks, whether we keep it every Sunday or we keep it every alternate Sunday. Most likely, we will have to revert back to the time of 10:30 for those talks and not 10 o'clock. So please do look at the newsletter which will come your way. If you are on the mailing list, which is on the website, you will get a newsletter which will announce the coming plan. I must say a couple of things. For me, the lockdown, and I'm talking like a regular guy, like everyone here, has shown me a few things. And one is that those on the spiritual path, I have seen, have deepened their practice in whatever way. I have seen this very sincere attempt with many people, many emails I've received. I've got phone calls. And it is quite beautiful to see that this time which has been forced upon us of being in lockdown, which may bring its frustrations, but has deepened the spiritual journey at a very fast pace, because after all, we are then so caught up in our daily lives and daily living. I have found it with myself. I was taking the time to read books which I had read earlier, and I had this habit of underlining sentences which I found very deep. And so I started doing these 10-minute podcasts where I'm reading aloud these sentences. And also, if certain memories and thoughts come up with time with my teacher or with any incident in life, I share that. And, you know, this would not have happened if this lockdown was not there, because I work Monday to Friday. So I have seen that when there's this flame which is burning already, anyone on the spiritual path, anyone on the journey to find out what life is about, it is doing these beautiful things, wonderful things. And at the same time, we are on the threshold of a very different world. All that we held dear is under severe pressure. You know, I felt I could not be out of the office for a certain number of time because I have a small office with a staff of about 25 people. And here I have been forced away from it for 2.5 months. So these, as the mother of Pondicherry said, such severe limitation can only happen by grace. These are opportunities. So the downsides are bound to be there. Extreme pain, extreme suffering. Thousands of people, as we in India have seen with the migrants, of course, that is all there. But for our own journey, if we are drawn to this path of living the teaching, it is a gift. And hopefully now that we have been in this lockdown for so long, it is not going to leave us. Even when things open up, we will carry this with us, this wealth of learning. Of course, for those who are not affected by the lockdown, who are in countries where this not happened, their journey will continue the way it is. But for us, especially in urban areas and centers severely affected, this is what grace has shown us, for which we should be eternally grateful. And of course, as Rameshji said, a prayer of gratitude to God should arise spontaneously. That God, you have gifted us with the luxury of such beautiful spiritual teachings that we have access to.